Did the fullback bring him down? First time, maybe even second time. Still we go on. Juric has dribbled his way clear.
Welcome back to the Round Ball Project. I'm your host, Neil Simons, and joining me is one of the most influential people involved in sports broadcasting in Australia. Starting out his career 15 years ago, I'm pretty sure that's correct, Richard Bayless arrived at Fox Sports in 2011, and he was a news presenter on Fox Sports News and was also a host slash sideline commentator for the A-League. In 2016, the startling news at Optus, the telecommunications company had purchased the English Premier League rights, startled some within the Australian footballing fraternity. However, all our concerns were allayed as they brought on Richard as an executive producer and presenter. From the Premier League to the Champions League to the Euros and now to the World Cup, Bayless was appointed to the Director of Sport of Optus Sport in late 2019. Now, Richard is the main man behind Optus's football coverage as they continue to dominate the media landscape in Australia like we have never seen before. Welcome, Richard.
Hey, Neil, I think you really covered it there. I'm not sure we've got anything else to talk about.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot to talk about. Not too much. I won't obviously take up too much of your time, but it's an absolute honour to speak to you. Obviously, I've had admiration for Optus. Ever since 2016, I've been begging my parents to get me an Optus subscription. The Sims, but yeah, eventually,
yeah.
Obviously, yeah, I follow Manchester United, which I understand you're not too happy with, but that's fine.
It's, you know, everyone has their own little downfalls, so that happens to be yours, and that's all good. But I'm glad to hear that, you know, you convinced your parents and you got on board, mate. That's
yeah,
that's feather in the cap. I appreciate that.
Sweet. So I guess I'll just sort of take you through your career thus far. I guess your introduction to football as a child, like describe sort of what fascinated you about football in your childhood.
Well, the interesting thing is, I guess, is that I grew up in regional Australia. I mean, whether or not that's the interesting part, I don't know. But I feel like, you know, the fact that I kind of found football or came to love football as much as I do or did then was almost a little bit strange for where I grew up, sort of country New South Wales, not too far from Tamworth. And it's weird because, like a lot of kids there, you know, I played from the age of five and was obsessed with playing it, but I was the one in school who was obsessed with reading about it and obsessed with watching it when it was possible as well. You know, in the early 90s, it wasn't anywhere near as accessible as now, but yeah, I just completely fell in love with, I guess, primarily the English game. That was sort of what you got most of, I guess, back then. And, you know, you would only get snippets. It would be the highlights of the Premier League. And I remember watching some FA Cup football, actually, probably 94-5. And my most vivid early memory, I think, was probably the 94 World Cup final. I remember Baggio spraying that kick over the crossbar vividly just before going to school. So pretty much from that point onwards, I was sort of obsessed. And in a place where it wasn't all that normal, I suppose, to be as obsessed about football at that time. Myself and my brother, I think, stood out amongst our group of friends for being so passionate about it. And I think, you know, looking back on it now, so many times Australian football, we've tried to find the casual sporting fan, go and get the casual sporting fan and make them interested in football. I feel like I'm the test case for who they're trying to get on board. You know, in a rugby league and cricket community, it's the people that choose to go and enjoy football like I did. But the reason I fell in love with football had nothing to do with other sports. It was purely because I loved the passion and I loved everything that football had to offer, both overseas and domestically. You know, I remember watching the NSL, being fascinated with that as well, and watching hours upon hours of SBS's football coverage on Sundays. You know, I fell in love with the game because of the best things the game has to offer. And it's been, yeah, growing ever since.
And I have to say, I definitely do agree with sort of the token Australian football fan as to how we're converted into football fans. I was someone that I didn't really have a sporting background family wise. I guess maybe tennis, I don't know, but definitely I was nurtured to enjoy the game both domestically and overseas. Started overseas with United, and I remember, you know, those, I think I mentioned it to you before, those wonderful Saturday evenings when you watch the A-League and then transitioning into the Premier League coverage that evening. That's sort of my early memories of football in this country. And I guess now that we're sort of advancing technologically speaking, it's so wonderful how the next generation can grow up, you know, through streaming. And I guess we'll sort of go on to sort of, I guess, your Fox Sports stint. I guess, how did that come about? And what sort of fascinated you about that place for the time that you were there?
I guess from the outset, just being able to work somewhere where everybody is so obsessed with sport, or the majority are obsessed with sport. And if they're not obsessed with sport, they're just so knowledgeable about TV and production. And having gone through university, sort of majored in broadcast production, you know, I always, throughout school and university, I always had a camera with me. So, like, I would always be filming, whether it's mates doing silly things or filming sporting clubs and getting involved with being like a media officer for them. I always like to tell stories through a visual medium. So, through a mate, I got a contact at Fox Sports pretty much fresh out of uni. Spent a year there before traveling overseas for a while. And just, you know, being that place where everybody was sort of, it was, yeah, young and fresh and vibrant, and the brand was really where you wanted to be. And, you know, landing a gig there was, I couldn't really believe it, sort of straight away out of university. So it seemed like the obvious place to go, and the opportunities that came within there as well were immense. So, yeah, it was a really good, fun period.
And I guess, obviously, we're moving to Optus. Absolute uproar amongst the Australian footballing public. Why Fox lost the rights, whatever. But it was something new for us at the time. Streaming hadn't really been tapped into. And I guess Optus, from an Australian footballing perspective, were the first to tap into that unique streaming market. And I guess you obviously departed Fox to arrive at Optus. Describe those conversations and sort of what fascinated you about, again, what intrigued you about a new means for broadcasting.
Well, it was interesting. I remember exactly what I was doing when I read the press release, because like a lot of people, it kind of took me by surprise. And I was cutting a feature story actually at the time. I remember where I was sitting, what I was doing. And then the article popped up and I read it. And I remember just thinking, because I was busy, I remember thinking, I don't understand what that means, but I'll deal with it later on, you know, because it was like you say, it was sort of took everybody by shock and nobody really knew, you know, what it meant. But as it kind of sunk in, and obviously there was the disappointment there about losing the Premier League rights, and you just kind of start to think, well, this is a forced change. It's disrupting the market. This is the direction that sports broadcasting and streaming is going in. Maybe it came a little bit earlier than a lot of people were comfortable with, but you should really embrace change when it comes up, or at least try to understand it. So, you know, I had some conversations with some people I knew that was getting involved with the project at Optus Sport. They sort of, you know, pitched it to me, the idea of coming over and being EP and building it from the ground up. And when I say the ground up, it is literally that. I remember walking in the first day and going, ah, oh, there's literally nothing here. Cool. All right. Well, let's get started. But it just completely throwing yourself in the deep end. They're actually, you know, it's not an easy thing to do either. And I'm not looking for credit for doing it. Because, you know, sometimes you think, well, the comfort zone's good. Maybe I'll stay where I am. But it was just kind of I'll dive in head first kind of moment and see where it lands. And like you said before as well, Neil, you know, there was a period early on when a lot of people, probably a couple of years in really, were thinking, what on earth is this about? And this will never work. But I feel like we've got to the point now where maybe it has, and people sort of start to appreciate what we do and how we do it. And, you know, the landscape has definitely sort of evolved since then too. I mean, that was 2016. That feels like about 30 years ago. Only five. So
yeah, it's a really crazy thing to think about in retrospect, in hindsight, that we thought that streaming was so outlandish 4 or 5 years ago, and now we've obviously got the Optus Sport platform, and obviously everyone's trying to get their piece of the pie stand as well, various other parties. But I guess obviously you've got the wonderful environment at Optus Sport. It's actually a dream for me to go into the studios one day. I've heard about mates who obviously are working there and as such, and how wonderful the workplace environment is. How have you, in your opinion, helped to contribute to the direction that Optus Sport is traveling in at the moment? Obviously you've got a number of television rights, and we'll obviously go into the Euros and the Copa America, which we're very excited for.
Yeah, I think it's about surrounding yourself with people who are passionate about what they do and people who want to be part of building a team. You know, we have people, pretty much every single person in our production department, their production and editorial is obsessed with football. And the ones that maybe aren't still have the same drive and desire to implement new workflows and technology and, you know, build graphics and sort of drive us forward. So I guess, you know, it's kind of like when you see football clubs or teams say we're in a rebuilding phase, fans never really want to hear it, but that's a really good opportunity to actually just surround yourself or, you know, build a team with people who are going to be there for the journey mid long term and want to see you build something. So we actually, you know, we've grabbed a lot of people from Fox Sports, but then across the industry who have done various things. We've taken people from the NPL as well, sort of around the country, sort of from like a social producer point of view, graphics guys that have been in TV for a long period of time and just kind of pulled this team together that we're super passionate about working together with. The morale is always high, you know, regardless of what happens, because we're a team and we're in it together and we're there for the right reasons, I feel, as well. So hopefully that comes across in what we make and what we do. And the day that it doesn't might be the day that we have to rethink our strategies. But yeah, it's one of those things, you know, you can't take anything for granted in the industry. And you mentioned, you know, rights, for instance, you know, we don't take for granted the position we're in and the great content we're able to work with, and hopefully we can do more and be around for a long while and get better at what we do as well.
Yeah, and I guess really the whole World Cup rights, which you obviously purchased, I believe from SBS, if I'm not mistaken, that was obviously marred with controversy, that the whole uproar there. I was in Europe, so I had no clue what was going on, thankfully. And since then, it's obviously been an immensely large shift towards just outright positivity towards Optus platform. There's not nearly as many complaints, if any. I think the platform is flawless on every scale. I guess from that point onwards, from 2018 to now, how and why have you arrived in the position that you're at?
Well, the platform's not flawless now. I don't think it would ever be, purely because, you know, there's always room for improvement, I think. But yeah, you're right. In terms of where we are now compared to then, it's a fairly stark contrast. I think, you know, what happened in 2018 was something that we've actually seen happen to most OTT or digital providers around the world. Sometimes it happens when there are less eyeballs on it and it's, you know, less publicized. And other times it happens in a manner like that where it becomes a big issue and a big hot topic and talking point. I guess from my point of view and from, you know, production and editorial, you know, on-air coverage, promotion point of view, you know, we had a really big plan for that World Cup. And I actually think, you know, without wanting to sound flippant, I actually think we did very well in what we wanted to achieve. We sort of ticked every box in terms of what we present, who's on our coverage. I mean, the guests we had, kind of an eye-watering list. You know, we had studios in Moscow, we had studios in Sydney, we had four crews on the ground across Russia. You know, we sort of went further than a lot of people would have expected us to, and it was the first major tournament we've ever done. So, you know, we all look back and go, it's crazy that people, you know, had this negative experience, because for us it was the most rewarding personal and team-driven experience of our lives. However, you know, a percentage of people out there did have issues. It wasn't a higher percentage, really, if you look at the uproar and the publicity that came from it. I think we're talking between 5 and 10% of people had an issue. So that's pretty low, but the problem is that that's too high for a tournament like that, and obviously you want nobody to have any problems. So, yeah, coming to your question, I suppose, is, you know, the important thing from that was that we weren't going to walk away. You know, it would have been easy, I think, for individuals in our teams to go, you know what, that was too stressful, we're walking away. No one did. No one walked away from Optus Sport, because everybody believed that, you know, we can improve, we've got a good product, we've got a good sort of content philosophy and strategy, so let's stick to it. And if you remember correctly, we added the UEFA Champions League and Europa League pretty much straight away. We actually did the deal just before the World Cup, but from there, so we came out of the World Cup, we all sort of, you know, came up for air for a little bit, and then we were like, all right, sweet, we're going to have to put together coverage for the Champions League and Europa League. There was also Nations League as well. There were a lot of international friendlies. So we actually doubled down and added a lot more and did a lot more. And I think as a result, you know, invested more in all the things that matter. And hopefully since then, everybody's had a much better experience.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly have. It's always a treat to turn on the Premier League on Saturday evening or even do those very harsh but painstaking, but they're definitely rewarding early wake-ups in the morning just to watch, you know, Man United possibly lose. That happens, though. Or even watch, like, I have the luxury of watching these niche European teams as well and watching, like, we've never had we've never had Champions League and Europa League coverage like we've ever, like Optus have. I remember ESPN used to broadcast Champions League, I think, back in the day, and they rarely put on maybe 1 to 2 games per week. So it's a really wonderful thing to see Optus buy the rights yet broadcast all the games. There's one thing to hold the rights, there's one thing to withhold some games being broadcast live to air.
Yeah, I think though as well, like, you know, we can't take credit for that in itself though. I think because, you know, the way that content works now, particularly with digital sort of OTT providers, is that you want more and more content. And also the technology, the platform capability means that you can offer more and more. So, you know, Europa League mornings are honestly mad. Like, in terms of how many games are happening at once, it feels like 300. Like our digital rooms and social rooms and stuff where we've got, like, everyone sort of working in unison on the production. It's just haywire on those mornings. But, you know, it's about giving people more. I wonder though, Neil, like, you say that you wake up at those crazy hours. So do you not, you still have to watch United live? Like, you wouldn't watch on demand?
Well, I mean, I'm not a man who, because I've got Twitter and Twitter's Twitter. So I hate when I watch stuff on demand. For me, it's an internal thing. Nothing, not a reflection on the platform at all. Even if it's Melbourne Victory or anything like that, I will never watch a game in full without knowing the result, if that makes any sense. So, for example, I will not watch Manchester United, let's say at like 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. the next day when they played at like 3 a.m., but I don't know the result. Like, for me, it's like the live experience makes it better and it's just a more engaging product for me. I know people who still do that and, you know, kudos to you, but that's just how I operate, so.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a funny one because this is the first, like, I'm a Leeds supporter and it's the first season I've seen them in the Premier League for obviously forever, for 16 years. So it's the first time I've experienced watching my team with so much optionality. Like, when they were in the Championship, if they were on, I would watch them live, 100%. Doesn't matter what time.
Yeah, it's like, iFollow, that's the EFL platform, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Whereas now, like, I know I can wake up a few hours later, but in my head, I won't sleep well if I know they're playing. Like, I have to watch them.
That's what I'm afraid of. That's what I'm afraid of. So, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there was one game this year where I didn't do that, and it was Man United Leeds at Old Trafford. And I watched it on delay, and it was maybe a few hours later. And obviously, it started the worst, like McTominay, of all people, getting 2 goals in the first 3
Banger.
Minutes.
Banger.
And I looked at it and went, what the hell is going on? And when it became 3-0 in 15 minutes, I went, I'm not watching this. Like, I'm looking at the score. Like, and 6-2, what? Like, so, yeah, it doesn't always work. Sometimes you don't want to sit through it, but that's what
we get. It can be worth it sometimes. But, you know, one thing that stands out to me is the obscene views on the highlight numbers for the YouTube. It's ridiculous. 70,000 views, 80,000 within a day, 2 days. It's unforeseen and unbelievable. Nothing like we've ever seen in Australian broadcasting. And I guess it's a real reflection of where Optus have come as a platform and how up to date you guys are with everything, with the coverage, with across all issues, even in Australian football. It's a wonderful thing, and I think it's a reflection on. You know, I will never watch all 10 Premier League games at a weekend. That's just not who I am. But it's always a Monday morning. I'll just catch up with all the games with these quick highlight videos. And it's something that I think Optus have pioneered in a way.
Well, it's interesting, actually, because, you know, YouTube, so the numbers on YouTube are really good, but they're equal, if not bigger, on the Optus Sport platform, which is really encouraging. We thought initially when we put highlights on YouTube, this might cannibalize what we do, you know, will it work? But it's actually grown both on social and on Optus Sport as well. And I think that's, you know, giving stuff for free is, I think, important as well where possible to grow the game and grow the reach.
Yeah, like the free streak.
Yeah, exactly. For any broadcaster, social media has to be part of your content strategy, and it can't just be tacked on. You can't just add it because people do that. You can't just say, all right, well, I guess we'll start a TikTok because people do it. No, it has to be part of your strategy. And I feel like, again, we're not taking credit for it. I feel like we've come about at a time where social is the core of everything anyway. So rather than adding it on, it's very much part of our content strategies.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more with that. And I guess something that it's been a recent implementation, I've actually spent a lot of time with guys, and I know a lot of guys who work in this department, obviously the editorial department. Obviously, Dave Wiener is the, he's very high up there, and he's, from my conversation, he's a genius to me.
He can do anything. He can't tap dance, but he can do everything.
Yeah, and obviously I know Jake pretty well as well. So I guess with that written content, obviously we've seen the likes of Davutovic, Tom Smithies. I'm just trying to think of individuals who've written for you, like Damir Kula, Joey Lynch, of course. I guess your written strategy, how do you see that moving forward? And it's obviously a very dynamic product where I've seen the content that you guys produce, you know, taking stuff from just, you know, weekly analysis videos to one of my favorite pieces in recent time, the Oli Roos squad, because it opened me up to all these players which I never thought would be considered for selection. So I guess in terms of written content, what do you see you guys moving forward?
Written is really important to us for a lot of reasons. You know, we do everything with an editorial lens on it. But, you know, we editorialize football. If we just provided live streams of games and highlights, I don't think it would do the job, because football is nothing without context. And, you know, written articles, written features do that in a way that others don't. You look at what The Athletic are doing in the US and UK. There's such an interesting model, but also the style of writing is just, in terms of depth, it's just something so much more. You know, Dave and I met in Centennial Park in Sydney when he was at his previous employer, and we said, do you think we can maybe start written editorial? How would we do it? And we sat there and we came up with a sort of a concept where we don't really do breaking news. What we try to do is give that little bit more depth. And whether that's related to our rights, so Premier League or Champions League, Women's Super League, or it's a little bit closer to home, because also our audience is Australian primarily. So, you know, we don't want to pretend like the only football in the world happens overseas, because it doesn't, you know, and the world we live in here in Australia is really important to us, and the context is important. So, you know, things like written editorial, you know, whilst a slightly newer product or offering within the Optus Sport app itself, is massively important, I think, moving forward in terms of, you know, how we have a conversation with the audience, a two-way conversation with the audience in Australia.
And that's obviously extremely important. And I guess, I suppose you do Australian football the best in the country. That's my opinion. When you do it, the way you cover it, you do it in the best way possible. Like, no one's really covered the Torre brothers in a way which is unique and engaging. And that editorial that came out a couple of months ago was extremely eye-opening. And I guess this sort of hampers to my another conversation. The Football Belong series last year, which was prepared for the Euros, and I believe there's some more work. I did see Ben Koonan the appeal of the week. His little like camera set up.
Yeah. Well, he's everywhere. There's like 10 Ben Koonan, so you can never be quite sure.
Yeah. I saw him at the South game and the Dandenong game. But that whole series as a whole was, I think, the greatest thing that's been produced in Australian football since in recent memory. And also that podcast series as well is fantastic. That for Joe Didelitz is the way he just expresses himself, he's like a professor. He's a genius. And I guess those two series, obviously with the same title, how pivotal is that moving forward, and what plans do we have for the Football Belong series, and how important is it to focus on the cultural aspects of Australian football?
Yeah, well, you know what, Neil, I feel like I'm going to give you an exclusive here, whether or not it's an exclusive that many people care about. But we do have another series coming up that we're in the midst of creating now for Football Belongs. Eight more short form episodes, and then the documentary that we've been working on as well. So the 8 episodes coming up in season 2, Albania, England, Scotland, Hungary, Italy, Greece, Portugal, and Malta. So there you go. There's you're the first person outside of the Optus Sport walls to know that. We're sort of in the midst of putting that together because we had a lot of stuff that we had to stop due to lockdown, due to COVID last year, like the Greek one and the Italian one, for instance. So we sort of parked it and said, let's just do a second series as we sort of build up to Euro 2020. And it's still been a massive challenge, sort of flying people around the country and being able to work in amongst border restrictions and whatnot. But I think it's going to be massively rewarding, some of the stories that we've unearthed for this second series. And the opportunity to work with someone like Dave Davutovic, who has been in Australian football for a long time, sort of since the turn of the century, if you like, and his passion is unbelievable. So to be able to work with these guys, him and Benny and I have been mates for a long time, you know, it's a privilege for us. And we also don't take for granted the opportunity we have. And you know, we are one of the few places in Australia that's actually hiring journalists, football journalists, you know, commissioning them for work. We're one of the few places that are going out and actually, you know, telling football stories. So we don't take that for granted. We want to make the most of it and do the best job while we have the opportunity. So, yeah, there's more Football Belongs to come. I'm glad that you like the first series and that the podcast is up your alley as well. We're also talking about maybe doing an ebook for the written chapters, which would be cool. None of us have done that before, so we'll see how that goes. It might fall in the heat, but we'll try. And hopefully after the Euros as well, you know, it's not just all about the Euros. We're doing it because we want to tell those stories, and hopefully there'll be more down the track too.
Yeah, well, that's eye-opening news, and certainly news that I'm going to welcome. I would definitely wonder who you'd focus on for a lot of those countries. Obviously, you mentioned so many of them. I have to go through them. Obviously, Greece and Italy are huge in the realms of Australian football. And I guess for me, tapping into the NPL for the first time ever, you know, I'm obviously commentating, but it's also it's an eye-opening opportunity to go to these communities. I'm coming from a South African background. Coming to Australia, it's such a multicultural nation, and you get to go, you know, to, you know, Lakeside Stadium, or I'm actually going to Melbourne Knights on Friday to commentate that match. So it's an eye-opening thing for me, and to delve into these cultures is such a wonderful thing, and nothing that Australian football as a whole has covered in that sort of lens. But I guess we'll just go on to the Euros and the Copa America. Obviously, the fact that Australia aren't going to be playing is obviously a big downer on things, but we still have the Olympics. But I guess having these two...
Or do we? I'm glad you're confident.
Yeah, I'm confident. Well, I mean, they're holding a camp in later this month, and they're bringing overseas Aussies to, I think, Saudi Arabia or Qatar. Regardless, we hope and pray.
Let's see.
Yeah, let's see. But one thing we do know that's going to happen is the Euros and the Copa America, one of the two at least. How do you envisage that coverage taking place? The Euros are such a huge competition. Obviously, we've talked about the Football Belong series and how that's going to tie into it. But what sort of new engaging ideas will Optus explore for these two wonderful competitions?
So, I feel like I'm the bearer of breaking news for you, Neil, well. I've got another piece for you. We're actually not doing the Copa America at Optus, which it is a massive shame for us. It's because of what happened in 2020. You know, obviously that tournament being postponed, delayed, and, you know, reading the tea leaves, knowing Australia weren't involved in it. We weren't just broadcasting it because of Australia, I should say that, but, you know, things kind of changed over a very difficult 2020 for a lot of things. And you know, we didn't renew the contract for that tournament. So it's a shame. I love the tournament personally, and I know a lot of people do. Let's hope it actually happens. But I think time will tell on that. As for the Euros, massively pumped for it. I mean, it's a moving feast. Every day, you know, we spend hours and hours on the plans, and we've had the plans for, 18 months now. And things are just changing. I mean, there were rumours that it might be purely in the UK. Our information is that that's not the case, but then UEFA hasn't necessarily confirmed it completely. So we're sort of, you know, adjusting and adapting as we go. But I think the really fun thing about the Euros is that it's the same as all our coverage, you know, Men's World Cup, Women's World Cup, UEFA, Champions League, Europa League. We know that being there is a huge part of it. And it's not just being on the sideline and telling you who's in the team, because everybody can use social media to find that out. It's about sort of capturing the essence of the tournament. We're actually going to send travel diary style reporters around the continent and stick them with the Ukrainian fans for a couple of weeks, like send them off to Poland and just like proper throw them into the tournament. We've got a young guy called Ollie Gill that works for us. We just throw him where we want to throw him.
The banter on the Premier League coverage is I do have a little bit of empathy towards him. You're a bit harsh on him sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, you know, you need that person everywhere. He's just, you know, Ollie, just go and do this. Just go and hang out in Baku for a couple of weeks. But sadly, we can't even do that. I mean, you know, the fans more than likely aren't going to really be there. So we still are going to be there. Absolutely. We'll be at games. We'll be in London, like with different talent, you know, names from European football rotating through. We'll have our main studio. We'll host every game despite the hours in Australia. You know, the usual thing. We'll offer a little bit more as well when it comes to content. So, you know, now, you know, we do highlights and mini matches. We'll do 3-minute highlights. We'll do 10-minute highlights. We'll do mini matches. We'll do mega matches for every game. We'll host every game live, pre-halftime, post. We'll have reporters at a lot of the games. We're going to throw absolutely everything at it. And hopefully within the app as well, there'll be some developments and bits and pieces that make it a really cool experience. For a lot of people, it might be the first time they've used up the sport. Italy weren't at the 2018 World Cup, so I'm sure there'll be some Italian fans. Ooh. Maybe you'll find us for the first time.
It's very true. I do agree with you there. The first time that many will use it, hopefully. I guess I was actually meant to go to the Euros round of 16 in Wembley.
Devastating.
That sucks, man. You know what? But there's no better place that I've been than watching the coverage on Optus Sport, isn't there? So
why did you wink at me then? That's weird.
Nah, I didn't wait. I'm just thinking, right?
Oh, good. Yeah, sweet.
Normally, no. But there's no better place, honestly, than after sports coverage. And it's obviously wonderful. Like seeing Craig Moore and Mark Schwartz at the grounds, it's obviously fantastic. And, you know, Aloisi, obviously, on the coverage as well. Scott McDonald, when he's not scoring bangers in the A-League, he's on Optus Sports coverage, which is great. I think he actually was doing stuff for you like 2 hours after his Wonder Strike and gets the victory. Is that correct?
Yeah, he was still like he was like red. It's almost like he'd run off the field and just run to the studio and he was trying to be all humble about it, but we know he enjoyed it. But yeah, gotta love Scotty. I think it's cool working with all those guys because, you know, what they've invested into Australian football by being overseas and by achieving at that level, it's great. And they're all just really good to work with. That's kind of a key element as well. You know, it's cool sort of meeting these guys. We had Mark Milligan in today for a podcast. He'll sort of do some stuff with us coming up soon. And again, just a great bloke. And, you know, all these guys are really good to work with.
Yeah, and I guess that really concludes it from my end. I've got two questions out of the like 50 I've got. So I've got this one from Peter. He first of all, he says a great guest. A reflection on you, not me.
Optus, thanks, Peter.
Obviously, his question is Optus strictly going to be a football platform moving forward? Obviously, you did the cricket back in the day. So is it just going to be just football, or are we possibly going to see a sort of broadening of horizons in some way?
So yeah, when we did the cricket, we were the digital rights holder for the cricket. So we did the Ashes, for example, and that was cool. But it wasn't broadcast rights or streaming rights. I think that's the realm we want to play in terms of being the official rights holder, whether exclusive or not, for, you know, certain sports and competitions. I think at some point, we'll be branching out into other leagues, other tournaments, and other sports for sure have to be on the horizon too. You know, we're committed to football and we've found great people that are invested in football and passionate about it to work for us and drive our sort of football content strategy forward. But, you know, if we were to go out and get another sport tomorrow, then absolutely we'd look to do the same and give the same amount of love to whatever it would be.
Yeah, and I guess moving on to, I guess we'll start with football and we'll end with football. Socceroos 05 was a big Australian football story. This is from Lee Broxham Facts. That went back all the way from 1974. And his question is, what's the next big Australian football story that we are seeing developing before our very eyes?
You know, that's such a good question because, you know, that sort of that 32 years, you know, 74 to 2006, you know, people experienced the hurt, but it grew and grew and grew as it went. It wasn't until the end of it that that emotional kind of outpouring happened because of what everyone had been through. So in answering the question, I guess it's something that we don't necessarily won't know until we look back on it. One that sort of springs to mind is this kind of continual battle for football to be comfortable in its own skin. You know, I mentioned it at the start, you know, we're so obsessed with what do cricket fans think of us and what are rugby league fans? Or we want to get AFL viewers to watch football. You know, one day we'll just be comfortable in our own skin, you know, and I think the only way we do that is by looking at what we do well, looking at our own unique aspects and just enjoying them for what they are. People will come on board if they want to, and if they don't, they won't. Let's not get hung up about it. I think one day Australian football will be comfortable in its own skin, whether that's after the 2023 Women's World Cup or further down the track, I'm not too sure. Maybe it's one day when our National League is, you know, genuinely flying with huge crowds and great TV ratings, etc. I'm not too sure, but I think that's something that might be evolving at the moment. And the other one is probably similar to that. You know, no longer is it acceptable for us to just qualify for a World Cup. You know, over those 32 years, we were desperate to do it. We had to do that. That was where we had to get to. But, you know, now we've been at a few consecutive, you know, we've been into the knockout stage, not for a while, mind you, but we have been on that stage now. It's not enough to qualify. We need to go there and perform. And whether or not people in our lifetime see Australia win a World Cup, who knows? And maybe people laugh at the suggestion of it, but why wouldn't we aim for that? You know, we need to be more than just outsiders that are fit and tall and good from corners. You know, that's not who we are. That's not going to win us World Cups. We need to evolve. So whether that's the next big football story of that magnitude, I'm not too sure. I think it's a really good question, but there are a couple of thoughts on maybe what they could be.
And I guess we're definitely entering a new phase in Australian football. We've obviously got such a wonderful talent pool of Australians going into the Oli Roos and future World Cup qualifiers. We've got Lyndon Dykes. Actually, no, he's not Australian. Never mind.
He's a fake Scotsman. Let's not talk about him.
Yeah. No, he's gone. But there are plenty of engaging stories within, I guess, Australian football. I mean, if you look at the Australians in the Premier League, we haven't got many of them, but that whole Matt Ryan thing with Arsenal move. I remember I was at Friday night dinner. I checked my phone. I'm like, yeah, that's a joke, isn't it? It was real. Matt Ryan actually is playing for Arsenal. And we've got Caleb Watts in the Premier League. And I think despite sort of the all the doom and gloom surrounding, I guess, the status of football in this country, there's definitely a way to look up. And I think you look at the talent pool we have within the A-League and overseas as well, Danny Urich. We can go for all day and night, but I think there's a means for football to remain comfortable in its skin. I think Optus is a perfect illustration of how football is able to operate in a, oval. Oval. I mean, the AFL is like an oval ball, right? What's the rugby ball? I'm not sure. Like,
it's oval as well.
Yeah, oval. Yeah, and like in a
oblong is oblong the word? Oblong is a word.
I've got no. It's a great question, actually. Yeah, but
you're right. Like, I think what we need to do, though, really, and without going too in depth into it, is just basically connect the fact that 2 million people in Australia play football with the fact that not that many people watch it. And well, you know, it is simple, but no one really knows how to fix it, me exactly. Included. But you know, we have to close that gap, and I think going back to the point about being safe, comfortable in our own skin, that will help, you know, rather than being paranoid about losing talent to AFL or league or union, do something about it. Like, make the pathways better, make the opportunities better, like link from grassroots through and have kids associate with A-League clubs. I don't know what the stat is now, but at one point it was less than 20% of kids that play football, registered football in Australia, identify with an A-League club.
Yeah,
I don't think that stat would have gone up. I think it's probably the same, if not worse. So we start to fix things like that, and it's a different proposition. But that's a different podcast for another day, Neil. I feel like that one would take quite a while.
Yeah. I've got plenty of those. And I think the state of football discussions was definitely something that uncovered a lot of these issues. And I hope to see one in the future. I mean, getting Dukes back on screen was crazy. Like, that's mental.
How good was he as well?
Oh, he's like, his little coffee shop is great. No, I can't lie. But yeah, I think that will sort of conclude this sort of Richard Bayless episode. It's been an absolute
pleasure. I feel like Neil, that you know, you've got some questions there that were absolutely going to grill me. I feel like you've let me off the hook. I'm not legit.
I've got nothing to grill you about. Like,
good.
The issues that that the public want to grill you about, I'm not going to grill you about. That's
they're the ones I meant. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. No problem.
No chance. No chance in hell. But yeah, I think just despite sort of, people are pessimistic in the football landscape here in this country. I don't think we've ever been in a state where we've honestly said the game's in a good place, even during that peak era of 2015. That was, you know, the biggest and best Australian football is place that it's gotten to in my lifetime. I don't think we'll ever really be comfortable with the standpoint, with the place that we stand. However, you know, there's always a we always have hope, and there's always a means for us to be excited. And I think the upcoming tournaments are definitely engaging and powerful tools of expression. And I'm really excited to watch them on Optus Sport.
Yeah, thanks, Neil. No, I appreciate, obviously, the support from you guys. You know, we have actually felt probably more so in the last 12, 18 months, you know, that a lot of people like watching Optus Sport, which is all we really ever wanted to do. We just want people to like what we were doing. And if we could continue to do it because we like doing it, well, then brilliant. You know, we'll take any opportunity. But yeah, thank you to yourself and listeners who are being so supportive. And, you know, we'll obviously try to do what we can to improve football coverage in Australia and somehow hopefully improve the overall health of the game if we can. But it's not easy, but we'll see what we can do.
Not easy at all, but Optus are certainly staking their claim as the best OTT platform in Australia. I've said it, and that's what I agree with. Nothing's gonna take it. Nothing's gonna overtake it, in my opinion, thus far. Yeah, thank you very much, Richard, and we'll obviously speak soon. Thank you.
Awesome. Take care.